you always find it's not quite it. It's not, you always very quickly come to a point of dissatisfaction because the transcendent dimension is missing from your life. And what is the transcendent dimension? The formless space. Not realize that that is the essence of who you actually are. And so people go through life frustrated, complaining that the world isn't doing what it should be doing to make them happy, not realizing the world cannot make you happy. It's not in its power, because the world is the world of form. It can challenge you so that you go deeper and finally find the formless. That's what it's there for, really. And of course, the world is good at that. It always does that. And once you know that, then every challenge you can actually welcome. And every loss you can actually, even though you might weep, you can still welcome it. Because you can see how precious loss also is. Because what is loss in whatever form? Loss is some form has been removed from your life and has left behind an empty space. And that happens when somebody close to you dies. Suddenly there's an empty space. And that is, from the point of view of form, is very painful. And of course you will cry, you will weep, because there is the reality of form, but there's also the deeper reality of the formless. And if you can be with both, then in the presence of death, although you may weep, there will be a deep peace that you sense, because the formless shines through the space that's left behind. And that's the sacred, the divine, God, whatever you want to call it. It shines through. Wherever there's loss, there's grace. The grace is something has opened up. And that's the essence, that is the essence of the form that passed away also. And that is the indestructible. That is the deathless, as it's in Buddhism, the closest Buddhism ever gets to talking about God is death, the deathless realm, Amaravati, the deathless. That's how wonderful to see. And then balance comes into your life. The dance between form and formlessness. The dance between the world and spirit, if you want to call it that. I don't use it very often, it's too many associations there. There you have. And then the beautiful thing is the world is no longer a frustrating place. When you realize that the world was actually meant to be frustrating, it's no longer frustrating, then you recognize whatever challenge comes, you say, oh, okay. Either you resist, or you go deeper. That's always the choice. There's a beautiful line in a book, I believe it's called The Road Less Traveled, and it has the best first sentence or first two sentences of any book. That's why I never read the whole book. It says more or less this: life is difficult, and when you know that and accept that, it's no longer difficult. It's so simple, isn't it? Once you know, you don't expect something that the world cannot give you: happiness, fulfillment, peace. And once you realize you don't need the world to give you that, because that is already, that emanates from the formless dimension within yourself, then, ironically, maybe the universe has a sense of humor or irony, then ironically, the world and the things of the world are actually quite nice. They're quite satisfying, and you appreciate them. It's not that you deny. I don't believe that those ancient practices that almost aggressively deny the reality of form are that helpful. I don't think you can get to the find the formless within by fighting or aggressively denying the world of form. The world of form is also an expression, it's all an expression of the One. And so the world then becomes a place where you can appreciate whatever form is around you, arises, no matter whether it's large or small. Mostly it's small, because mostly your life consists of small things. There's a flower, there's the shopping to do, there's go from here to there, get into the car, take one step at a time. It's all small, really, and you can appreciate the preciousness of all the things in your life. And it's suddenly what before was frustrating, now is actually quite pleasant. Why has it become pleasant? You no longer demand from the world, which includes places you go to, which includes people you meet or have relationships with, which includes situations in your life that arise, which includes achievements, successes or failures, whatever. You don't demand that they should give you what they can't. And you can let them be, you can honor them, but you're not again going to a situation or a place and say, I demand that you fulfill me. Or go into a relationship and say, I demand that you make me happy. Or whatever condition you encounter, some success and expect ultimate fulfillment through it. No, briefly, yes. And then things happen. So with this comes then the freedom. Freedom from, you could call it, freedom from the world. It doesn't mean you disengage from the world, but your attachment to things lessens and then goes. There is appreciation, there is honoring the beauty of life, the beauty of even the smallest things, yes, but without the attachment to that, you don't need that anymore, and you can let go when it's time to let go. This always comes wherever you go and whatever you do, at some point it's time to let go. And to the, as long as there's attachment, it's a painful thing when life says, okay, let go now. No, I can't. It's part of who I am. And that's painful. And then life may even tear it out of your hands. It's even more painful. But it could be so simple. You could say, there you go. And then some other form appears. Oh, that's nice. And you know full well there's nothing that is yours ultimately. The whole thing that you can possess something is, of course, an illusion. You only, for a little while, it comes in, you look after it, and then you hand it on. You look after it, pass it on. Let's see what freedom. And then you appreciate the beauty of all things. And you see beauty where before you didn't see beauty, also in the smallest things. And you don't have to take acid for that. But of course the truth is everything around you is intensely alive and beautiful. It's only judgmental mind that creates the screen, a barrier of conceptualization between yourself and the aliveness of the world. But the essential aliveness is within, in the formless. So don't look for the aliveness in there. Nature can hint at it, can give you, connect you with your own aliveness. Yes. The essence of all life is within. The action of the soul or consciousness is oftener in that which is felt and left unsaid than in that which is said in any conversation. It's not in the words, it's in the spaces. It broods over every society, and they unconsciously seek for it in each other. You unconsciously seek the formless in the other. We know better than we do. We do not yet possess ourselves, and we know at the same time that we are much more. I feel the same truth how often in my trivial conversation with my neighbors, that somewhat higher in each of us overlooks this byplay, and Jove nods to Jove from behind each of us. God nods to God from behind each of us. You're engaged in superficial conversation, but there's something in the background that far transcends anything in the world of form, which includes words and thoughts. And if you can sense that in yourself, then you can also sense it in the other. And if you sense that in the other, all relationships become holy relationships, as the Course in Miracles would put it. Then you recognize the holy in every relationship, even if it's a brief one. And there is something in you that knows and recognizes the truth. We know truth when we see it. Let skeptic and scoffer say what they choose. Foolish people ask you when you have spoken what they do not wish to hear. How do you know it is truth and not an error of your own? We know truth when we see it, as opposed to opinion, as we know when we are awake that we are awake. Do you know that you are awake? Yes, you must be. So this is direct realization. So if you know that you are awake, that means what is it that you really know? You know that you're awake. You can subtract anything that appears in your consciousness at this moment, any form, and you could then be left with just the state of being awake. And there's the formless. One more sentence. Under all this running sea of circumstance, whose waters ebb and flow with perfect balance, lies the aboriginal abyss of real being. Circumstances, situations, world of form, comings, goings. Underneath it all, the timeless, formless. Become familiar with the state of not needing to continuously interpret and judge what is happening to you or around you. You don't need that. You actually become more intelligent when you don't continuously and compulsively interpret what's happening or what's in front of you, what you're perceiving. That's an old habit going back thousands and thousands of years. And the habit says, no, I have to interpret. I become stupid if I don't. I won't know what's going on anymore if I can't judge this person that I'm meeting, or I can have some kind of opinion of I like or dislike this situation. I say, oh, this I want, this I don't want, this should be happening, that shouldn't. All the stuff that the mind produces continuously that detracts from the simplicity and power of the present moment, that the mind puts out the screen of conceptualization. And so in living without the compulsive screen of conceptualization is the great liberation. And so you invite into your life the spaces, the one space really, but spaces of not knowing, not needing to know, not just being present with what is, just giving attention to what is at this moment, which implies, of course, accepting the isness of whatever this moment brings, whatever form arises in this moment. Can you say yes to what arises in whatever form? Because if you should say yes, because otherwise you suffer. Because what is already is. So if you argue internally with what is, you really make the universe into an enemy. I don't want this, but there it is right in front of you. You say, okay, this is what is. You become the space for it. And that's a very quick way of accessing the space consciousness in you, by simply bringing an acceptance into the present moment in whatever form it comes. Where before there was an irritation, where before there was a complaint, where before there was an angry reaction, there's now saying, oh, okay, that's what is. You open your arms and say, yes to now. Present moment is my friend. I've had the enemy, present moment has been my enemy for long enough. I'm now making friends with the present moment. Why? Because that's all I have. There's nothing else, ever. Why not make friends with the present moment in whatever form it appears? And the secret then, of course, the miracle is, if you make friends with the present moment, no matter in what form it appears, then the formless opens up within you, because you become who you already were, space for it. You are the space for that. That's all. So the primordial spiritual practice, or if you want a mantra, can I be the space for this? You can ask yourself the question when situations arise that before you might have complained about, been irritated about, whatever the reaction would have been. Can I be the space for this? And usually, or I would say always, you will find, yes, I can be this. You just forgot that you can be the space for it. You forgot that you are the space for whatever arises in your life, because you are the now, you are the consciousness in which it arises. So you become who you already are. Can I be the space for this? With that is the end of all irritation or angry reactions or complaining. Inner no, don't want this, want something else. Yeah, but this is what you have now. And it doesn't mean that you get stuck with what is. The amazing thing is you move on much more quickly when you bring a yes to the present moment. Then life moves on. You've passed the test. If you bring no to the present moment, means you haven't passed. Okay, you get stuck. It's all expressed beautifully in the film Groundhog Day. You can live in resistance, you can try whatever you will, as long as you're stuck in your negativity, you have to do it the lesson again. You wake up the same day, this protagonist wakes up in the same day every day, until finally an inner shift happens, and he begins to say yes to the present moment. And then suddenly all the unpleasantness of this day that he has to repeat again and again, all the unpleasantness of that day becomes actually quite pleasant. He's beginning to help people because he says yes to situations. So he becomes a helpful, beneficial presence in that day, and suddenly everybody loves him in that town. And finally he becomes so accepting, whereas before he hated where he was and what he hated his work. Many people live like that, hating everything, complaining continuously, nothing and nobody's ever good enough. And then suddenly the shift happens, and finally he's in the same place, and he says to his girlfriend, "Oh, let's stay here, it's quite nice." And then suddenly he's free, and he's no longer forced to repeat the same day. Deep spiritual lesson in there, and that's how it is. So it's the egoic mind tells you, if you accept what is, you'll be stuck. This is not the case. Acceptance is the beginning for powerful action, if action is required. And non-acceptance, the action that you take on the basis of non-acceptance, is never powerful. It always is tainted with negativity. And you could say, I call it karmic action. It produces more unhappiness, more karma. So a very quick way then of accessing the space consciousness within the formless is not resisting the form that the present moment takes in your life, internally. Wow, huge shift. You can try it this evening. There may be little things happening on your way home. Wow. Non-resistance, greatest power there is. Marina asks from North Carolina, in my efforts to be in the now, I find I'm able to reach a state of peace and connectedness. I think that I wouldn't call it effort, but I know what you mean. It feels complete and fulfilling, and yet there's a voice in my mind saying that to be truly connected, I should find a way to be in service to others. Can you help me understand the role that being in service to others plays in the evolutionary impulse of the universe? Thank you for bringing a ray of hope to humanity. It is an interesting synchronicity to me that the day of your program launch is also my birthday. Happy birthday. The evolutionary impulse of the universe, the arising of presence. You cannot not be of service to others as presence arises. One way or another, the way in which you are of service to others will vary from person to person. You may not immediately know what your way is. Again, the mind sometimes wants to know too soon, okay, what am I doing? What am I going to do with it now? Be present. And gradually, the realization of how you are to serve others, whether it's through direct spiritual teaching or whether it's through some activity into which the energy frequency of presence flows, you don't know. You need to, it may come to you, it might take a while. It took years for this teaching to come out of the state of presence, so many years. It may take a while, or it may happen very quickly. There is an acceleration happening on the planet now of the arising of presence. So it's probably happening more quickly to you than to me. How to be of service to others, whether it's through direct spiritual teaching or some activity, they will come to you either through an external circumstance that will tell you what it is that you need to do. It can come from the outside as a synchronistic event. And this, many people are telling me that they're finding that things that are just right as they live more and more in presence come into their lives. The right offer, the right, you're meeting the right person, and suddenly what it is that you need to do arises. From the outside it comes. Or you wake up one morning and with the realization of, this is what I need to do. And then I would wait and see, just to make sure that it comes from a deep enough place. And if it's still there the next day and a week later, and there's a deep sense of peace with it and power, then it comes from a deep place. And then it's good to act on it. This is how I got taken away from living in England. I loved England, but one morning I knew I have to remove myself without knowing why. And it was so strong that I removed myself. I knew I had to go to the west coast of North America, not knowing why. And it took a while before I got rid of everything, removed myself, landed on the west coast. What now? Don't know. And so I sat there for a few weeks in presence. And the mind, yes, came in occasionally and said, This is why did you come here? It doesn't make sense. And the mind even started to look at ads for flying back to England, fares. And then at some point, the impulse came to buy a notepad, carried the notepad, not home, I didn't have a home, somebody had put me up. And there in his kitchen, the pen came and a very strong impulse came to write. And I wrote, what is enlightenment? Somebody had once asked me that, but that I remembered more or less what I had said. But that was a new stream that came. And I'd written one page and I knew this is a book. It's coming. And so there was simply something I couldn't have predicted, obedience to what came out of the present moment, and the trust to go just into the, with a limited amount of money, into complete unknown. But don't do it on an impulse that is a restless kind of impulse that comes out of any kind of negative emotion, and see if it's still with you after a while. Then it's right, it's peaceful and it's powerful. It seemed the book could only be written on the west coast of North America because of the energy field there. I realized it later when I went back to England. The writing stopped. I could only do editing. And so all kinds of things people will be called upon to serve in all kinds of capacities. According to your abilities, it may be that you produce something artistic or music that is inspiring to many people, whatever it is, we don't know. It may be that you set up a business and everybody who comes there is greeted as for who they are. So you recognize everybody as spirit, as consciousness, and everybody who comes away from your business feels lighter and more themselves. Many things can be used as excuses for spiritual transmission and spiritual teaching. And if you already have some business or some activity, it is quite possible that this could be continued to be used then as a vehicle for transmission of spiritual energy. And then it will become empowered. Beautiful thing. There's no predicting how this will change your life, except that it will change your life. And even if some people may not remove themselves, they may stay where they are, and yet it will change. It might not change what you do, but it will fundamentally change how you do what you do. That's always the most important thing, is not what you do, it's how you do it. What is the consciousness that flows into it? Is it the egoic consciousness, or is it the unconditioned consciousness?
Eckhart, I've heard you make reference to a number of situations which I think convey the same idea. You've talked about certain cultures that go through a stage where this thought process becomes more developed, which I interpret in some ways as being almost a loss of innocence. Is it necessary for a culture or a stage of civilization to go through this process of losing innocence, of getting trapped in the thought and emotional process, in order then to regain the development of awareness to reach a stage of enlightenment?
Thank you. Okay. That seems to be the process when we look at it. There are still remnants of ancient cultures, very few these days, who have not gone through that process of loss of innocence or loss of connectedness with being, we could call it, the natural connectedness with being. And a few humans may still have it, very simple people, perhaps who live close to the land, never left. Or very simple people sometimes still have it in some cultures, a natural connectedness with the root of life, with being. They feel they are rooted in themselves, there's a stillness there. That is the natural. What is happening when you lose it, whether it's an individual or whether it's a whole culture, a whole civilization, when you lose it, then you get lost in problem making, get lost in mind. It's a loss of original innocence, you could say, which of course is replaced by what is called in Christianity original sin, which simply means the dysfunction that we all inherit that is there in the collective. So the original innocence is replaced by the original sin. Original innocence, however, is much deeper than original sin. Original innocence is always still there, even in the place, even when original sin comes in, it only covers up the original innocence. It does not destroy the original innocence. So the original innocence remains, and then a human being, either an individual or a whole nation, culture, tribe, moves through the phase of being identified with mind, ego, thinking, problem-making, conflict-ridden, suffering life. Inflicting suffering on other humans around you, continuous violence, and so on. All that is part of the loss of connectedness with being. That's why so many ancient cultures, and this, the innocent state, we once were in that. Many ancient myths exist in different cultures throughout the world that speak of the golden age, something, a time when everything was beautiful. We have it in Indian mythology. At the beginning, humans, they say, lived in connectedness. I'm paraphrasing, but they were one with life, one with the divine. There were no, they didn't inflict suffering on others. There was no violence. There was, that was, and many cultures have that myth still. It survived as a myth. It's also expressed, of course, in the Bible at the beginning of the Bible, like a paradise, the loss of paradise. And paradise, of course, is not a place. It's a state. So the loss, is it necessary? Well, it's happening. It has happened and is happening. So it seems to be an evolutionary process. When innocence is regained, connectedness with being is regained, it is not the same as the state, as that state that was lost. And that perhaps is why it is necessary to go through the state of being lost. When it is regained at a deeper level. There's a great deepening. Innocence is there, but now from natural innocence, you now go to conscious innocence. You're fully conscious of your state, rather than living in natural. For example, this is reflected in your relationship with nature. As your consciousness changes, first, let's say, in the innocent state, there's a oneness with nature and a respect for nature, as the old civilizations had, as the Native Americans had, a respect for nature. They recognized nature as alive with spirit force. They recognized that the tree is not just a dead object that I can use for making money or for my benefit or to build a house or whatever. They recognize the tree is alive with something more than what you see, and they respected that life. And every animal, even if they had to kill an animal, they respected the life that is in the spirit presence in the animal. They inhabited a universe that was alive with presence. Now, then we lost that, and more we began to inhabit a universe that deadened ourselves to the aliveness of the universe. We can't see it anymore. So that we ended up looking at the whole of nature as a utilitarian thing to be used, but no longer recognized the essential aliveness that is in everything in nature. Why couldn't we recognize it anymore, that it is essentially sacred and essentially one with the life that we are, because we had lost that within ourselves. We had cut ourselves off from the root of being, we were completely trapped in mind, and then nature became dead, and we could then exploit it, do anything, because we didn't know that there's a sacred presence there. We've lost the sacred presence within ourselves. Well, it was covered up. Then we regain it. Then again, nature is alive, but this time there is the added dimension of conscious awareness. When you've always lived in oneness with nature, you don't even know that you live in oneness with nature. It's totally natural. But when you do it with full consciousness, there is an added dimension to it. And so this is what's happening, and this, it seems to be why the process is that we have to move through the stage of being lost and then regaining. Perhaps the truth of that is expressed in the parable of the prodigal son, which predates, actually, it's used in various cultures. It predates even Jesus, when Jesus used it. It exists in different forms. The son of a rich father says to the father, "Give me my inheritance. I want to go out and make a life for myself." And so the father says, "Okay, you go out into the world." And the son goes out in the world, squanders his wealth, becomes a destitute and becomes a beggar, and even forgets where he comes from. And then eventually the father sends messengers to the son to remind him, who he is, don't you remember that you are? And the beggar says, no, me, the son of the king? No, don't. And gradually the memory comes back to him, and then he goes, comes back to his father's house, and the father now loves him more than before. That's the story. So there's a deepening, what that parable means, there's a deepening after you've been lost. When you regain that which has been lost, it is regained at a deeper level because there is, you're now fully conscious of it. There's a conscious dimension, the awareness that is there. That's why that seems to be our destiny. But perhaps there is no, I just know that this is how it is. There may be exceptions. There may be certain people on the planet or small groups of people who don't go through it. Who knows? We'll have to see. I can only see the general trend, the general movement seems to be, yes, we have to go through that. There may well be exceptions to that. There may well be certain people who remain in the state of innocence, and that is wonderful too. I don't know. So that's the paradise regained. That is the cycle. And so I know that I had to go through it. You had to go through it, or are still going through it. And so the state of innocence is lost in childhood. Every child is still born with it, but then very quickly these days it is lost. Well, not, it's never lost, it's obscured. Yeah. That's the journey. From an anonymous questioner. I have read that as long as we are in a body, we have a shadow. Is this true for you? What is your shadow? Let me think. What is your shadow? Do you have a shadow? Okay, the answer is, part one of the answer is yes. Part two of the answer is, if you ask anybody if they have a shadow and they say no, then you know that they have a shadow, and if they say yes, they don't. Because shadow, which is just the way, it's a Jungian term, which I don't normally use, but what it means is an area of unconsciousness that you're not aware of, because if you're aware of it, it's no longer unconscious, and it's not really a shadow. So if it's an area of unconsciousness in your life, and if it's truly a shadow or an area of unconsciousness, then, of course, you won't know it. You might know there's a certain behavior pattern, but you will not recognize it as an area of unconsciousness. You might say, of course I get furious every time somebody mentions this or that, because, and you have some justification, it's not recognized as an unconscious reactive pattern. Or you might be totally unconscious of it and say, I'm never angry. Why do you accuse me of always being angry? That's so it's right there, but you don't know it, you deny it. So the shadow then, anybody who says no, they probably have one. If they say yes, then they have seen that there are still certain areas where there are certain behavior patterns still operating. Of course they are, because as long as somebody has a body, certain patterns operate, certain behavior patterns. You might have idiosyncrasies, ways of doing things. So if you're aware that that's there, then that's all that it is. It's not a totally conscious thing. It's not a shadow as such. We can talk also in terms of ego. If you're aware of certain patterns in you that originated from ego, and they still operate to some extent, although you live mostly in awareness, sometimes there's a momentum behind certain behavior patterns, like they're not being energized anymore, but it's still there. And so if you're aware of it, it's not really the ego anymore. Ego implies unobserved mind. Ego implies you don't know it's the ego. There's no awareness, there's just the conditioned mind doing its thing, acting out. The moment you bring awareness to it, there's a light on it. So if the light shines, it's shining on the shadow, it's not a shadow. Shadow means there's an absence of light, and light means consciousness. So ego is no longer ego when you know there's ego. It's only truly speaking ego when you don't know it. And there's unconsciousness.
Thank you. A friend of mine got shot and died a couple days ago. So it's been on my mind. What happens at the time of death? And where does the life force go? What is the transformation?
Thank you. Well, I haven't gone through physical death yet. As the Zen master who was asked about life after death said, I don't know. And they said, why don't you know? You're the master. And he said, yeah, but I'm not a dead master. But I've gone very deeply to what one could call death to identification with form. So in a way, I have gone into that realm from where I can say and know that ultimately what we see as death is the dissolution of form, that the eternal in us, which I know that firsthand, cannot be touched by that. So what exactly happens, I would say, depends on whatever state of consciousness you were in. That must be a predominant state of consciousness in this lifetime. If in this lifetime you were continuously identified with form, your body, or the psychological form of me, that means consciousness, this expression of consciousness, was still in a somewhat dreamlike state, which is identification with form. And you can easily extrapolate from that if the tendency of consciousness to identify with form was still there, which in other words, the awakening had not happened. This tendency will continue, there will be further identification with form, and the process will continue as the consciousness that is not yet fully awake will continue to identify with form again, and then gradually come to a place where awakening happens. Or if there has already been a disidentification from form in this lifetime, then you can extrapolate from there that the compulsive urge to identify with form and to seek another form or another cycle of form identification, this compulsion to seek further experiences through identifying with form, then would either be much weaker or be completely absent, in which case the consciousness that you are is no longer bound to this realm and will not seek to re-experience the realm of form. But in either case, I can tell you that all is well. It does not really matter whether this person now needs further experiences of identification, in which case this will happen, or whether he is already free of this urge, in which case he will move on and live in a realm that we can't even conceive of from where we are here. I get a sense deep within in the forms of what that is, but we don't need to talk about it here. All we know is nothing. This is the beginning of A Course in Miracles, which is the entire Course in Miracles summarized in two lines. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. That which is real in him is beyond form. Anybody can know that when you see a dead body, you realize that this is no longer whom you knew. This is not the being that you knew. This is only a shell. So nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal ultimately exists. This is why sages from all traditions speak of this realm of form as ultimately illusory. It ultimately, it depends what level you look at. The important thing is all is well. Beyond the appearance on the level of form, which is the only level where death exists, it is the transition from one form into another form or from one form into formlessness. That is what death is. No more than that. Nothing real dies. Nothing real dies. Which is to say, ultimately, there is no such thing as death. There only seems to be. It's a transmutation of form. Either form dissolves or seeks some other form, some other identification with form. That, for you, of course, to go into stillness in the face of death, to go into stillness is important, to become still within yourself, especially when you are sitting with somebody who is going through the death process, or you are confronted with somebody who has just died next to you, whatever. To be with that, immediately close your eyes, go into the deep stillness where you realize who you are. And once you realize who you are, which is formless consciousness, then you realize also that nothing real died. Nothing real died, which is to say, ultimately, there is no death. It does not mean that you can't feel sad. You can allow yourself to feel tears and to feel sad, and at the same time realize that nothing real died. That happened to me when my parents died 2 years ago within the space of 6 months, both of them. So to be confronted with the death of a loved one in a short period of time. Yes, there were tears and there was sadness, and at the same time there was the realization that ultimately there is no death, and who they were in their essence has not been destroyed, just as I know that I in my essence cannot be destroyed. And so that comes from that. It comes from self-realization or self-knowledge, the realization that the other also is beyond death. That's so you can have the coexistence of, yes, on this level, there is a place for sadness and mourning and tears. If it happens, it comes in waves. You may have noticed usually somebody close to you dies, the sadness comes in waves at you, and then you cry, and then it leaves you, and then comes another wave. And even when the wave comes, there can be an undercurrent of peace. So you're not totally in that emotion. You're not totally consumed by it. It exists there in your own spaciousness. And the spaciousness underneath the emotion is the peace. And it's only from that inner peace that you can realize the truth behind death.
I don't know how you'd label this question. I've met some people, or had conversations with people who are going through what might be called a crisis of awakening. And it seems like the identification with self is mostly fallen away. And they're in a kind of terror. And they feel like they're going insane. I'm not there myself, but I've had those times when it's like giving up all control over everything feels kind of scary. And I just wondered if you could speak to that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, I've also encountered people like that. The mind feels suddenly scared. The image really is the ego is still there to some extent, and it becomes a little panicky. I'm not in control anymore. But there is a place, so one can lose oneself in that, but I would advise a person like that to look for a place that is not confused inside, a place that is not scared. Many people say they're confused or scared, but really, the way out of it is really always a fuller acknowledgement of the present moment. Because the rest of it, all that confusion and feeling scared, is you're not in the present moment, you're in your mind again. And your mind is saying, oh, my life is falling apart. I have to start worrying again, because otherwise it's all going to fall apart. So once you realize that you've moved out, the realization needs to be there of that, okay, I'm lost in the mind again. No, okay, you're not lost because you know that you're lost. The moment you realize it's happening, for a while you may not realize it's happening, you're so identified with your panicky thoughts that you're completely in them, you don't even know what's happening to you. And then time may pass while you're completely in your thoughts. Oh, I think I'm going mad. I just don't know. I can't figure things out anymore. I can't work things out. Don't know. About, the mind says you should have an opinion about everybody, and I don't anymore. You should have an opinion about every situation you're in and your life. I don't know what to think about my life anymore. That's dreadful. That's the mind. And of course, the opposite is true. If you don't know what to think about your life anymore, then you're beginning to wake up and realize there's no such thing as your life. There's only life. Your life is a mental construct. It's a story. The story of me. So, it's always the moment you realize it's happening, or if you're trying to help somebody, bring your attention to the present moment. This is the exit point out of confusion. You can't be confused when your attention moves into the present moment, because the present moment is always simple. There's always a simplicity about it. The complexity is in the mind structures, the unobserved mind of the ego. So simply take your attention into the present moment, and then confusion suddenly dissolves. Because the mind says, I need to work something out. I need to understand something. No, you don't. All you need to is respond to this moment. Either this moment may require action or it may not require action. Just be there for this moment. And then it becomes simple. You cannot do more than one thing at a time, for example, in this moment. No matter how much you have to do, you can only do one thing. Well, you can do two things, but it gets hard. Basically, you have to do one thing at a time. And give it your attention, or do nothing, and bring attention to sense perceptions. Look around, and get a sense of what this moment feels, what it is, what does it mean, this moment. First of all, it means what you see and perceive, because that's this moment. And that's already a revelation, because you might have been so trapped in your mind that you were completely unaware of your surroundings. And you didn't realize there was a beautiful tree there, and there were clouds there. You didn't realize that there's the sound of the wind outside. You didn't realize that you are breathing in the air. You didn't realize that all those things around you are vitally alive.